See the topic on the slide today. He cares for you. God cares for us. This is a lesson I think that we need to be periodically reminded of. But I also want to go a little deeper in it. Because many of us here are younger. We don't have the memories or the knowledge of what occurred in this country. And not to mention other countries. And I want to try to put it into perspective today as to really how blessed we are. A, to be Christians, and all spiritual blessings come through Christ. But also understanding the physical blessings that we have within this country. The text we'll start with is 1 Peter 5, verses 6 and 7. A couple of different versions here. The New English Translation says, "And God will exalt you in due time if you humble yourselves under His mighty hand, by casting all your cares on Him, because He cares for you." So when we are in our darkest hours, and many of us today are grieving because of Terry's untimely passing, there are other things in your family that create sadness, create problems, create great challenges. But in the midst of those valley periods, don't ever doubt that God cares for you. The New American Standard Bible says, "Therefore, humble yourself under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you at the proper time, casting all your anxiety on Him, because He cares for you." Familiar passage from Matthew, actually should be 7 there. The Sermon on the Mount, just in yellow there. "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life." Easier said than done, isn't it? "What you will eat or drink, about your body, what you will wear. Isn't there more to life than food and more to the body than clothing?" And yet how much of our lives are consumed with worry, concern, and fretting about tomorrow. On down in verse 31 it says, "So then don't worry about saying, what will we eat, or what will we drink, or what will we wear? For the unconverted pursue these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. But above all, pursue His kingdom and righteousness, and all these things will be given to you." So then, in the bottom line, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Today has enough trouble of its own. One of the things that I've learned as I get older, and I was thinking about it, I've lived in 8 decades. Just think of it. But one thing I've learned as I get older is to live a day at a time. If I can just make today a good day, then I can pillow my head and rest, and then tomorrow will deal with itself. Doesn't mean you don't plan for the future and store up for the winter, as we say. But to what you do, when you have a day today, if you've accomplished everything that you can do today, and that's all you can do, then you can pillow your head with peace in the evening. Now, ingratitude is condemned. In other words, in Romans 1 and 20, where Paul, the writer, lists a whole host of sins, fornication, drunkenness, idolatry, homosexuality. And then, very curiously, he says this, "That they may be," and he's condemning the Gentiles, "without excuse, because that knowing God, they glorified Him not as God, neither gave thanks." God wants us to be grateful for the blessings that we have. "But the Gentiles became vain in their reasonings, and their senseless heart was darkened." So ingratitude in itself is a sin and displeases God. It violates God's law. The fact is that most people today fall somewhere between the two extremes. They either focus on what they do have, and they're very positive and generally optimistic about life and generally grateful about what they have, or many of us focus on what we do not have. "Oh, I've got a Chevrolet, but I'd sure like to have the Lexus. I've got a nice house, but I want a bigger, better one." And those people are generally not satisfied. They generally live their lives as pessimists and ungrateful for what they do have, because they're constantly pursuing what they do not have. The latter will never be satisfied in this life, because they will never obtain all that they want. Young people, it's good to seek things and have nice things, but don't put your hope of being satisfied in this life on physical things. Witness the many fabulously wealthy and famous people. Politicians, actors and actresses and others Famous people that are wealthy could buy anything and look at many, in many cases, not all, but in many cases, the miserable lives that they have and the destruction of themselves and their families and the people around them. As they say, the woods are full of that kind of people. However, it is often hard to remember these pieces of advice, these consoling promises when the baby is sick, when the rent is due or overdue, when the boss has threatened to fire me, when the transmission just went out, and when the power has been out for 5 days. It's hard to deal with the realities of life. And that's why I believe we need to periodically be jolted back, at least sometimes, understanding just how blessed we really are. The goals of the lesson, and I always try to start with the goals, it's first of all to help us understand God's love for His children in any situation we experience, both the peaks and the valleys. To understand also that our trials, relatively speaking, often pale in comparison to the trials others have experienced and are experiencing today. Now, I deeply feel this, and I think a lot of it came from my mother. My mother had very little in life, but she never dwelt on what she didn't have. She said there was always people who were worse off than she, and that was her philosophy. And she would just fret and worry about people who had troubles and trials in their life. Another goal is to increase our gratitude to God, the source of all good things, and the hope of better things to come. Now, I also want to say what this lesson is not designed to do, because it could go that way, and it's not. But it is not designed to diminish those of us who are dealing with grave, chronic, and real problems in our lives and families. We all have them, and we deal with them. And the lesson is not Pollyannish in tone. It's not to say, just gloss it over, just trust God, and everything will work out, although that's true in the extreme. But we still have to deal with the everyday issues that we face. It is not designed to make light of difficulties that present themselves from time to time, such as accidental injuries, sudden deaths of loved ones, and not knowing the situation with Terry when I wrote that. But we don't minimize those. We don't minimize that people lose their jobs and that natural disasters occur and that tornadoes demolish homes and so on. Those things happen. But on the other hand, we cannot get away from the fact that God loves us during those periods too. Life is not always fair, and very bad things happen and will continue to happen, young people, in the lives of some very good people. The truth is that Americans, and this is focused on us, Americans are richer, we're healthier, we are living longer, we have more creature comforts, we are generally better educated, and we have more leisure time and have more human potential than at any time in the history of the world. And I'll ask the question, but I'll ask it now. Is it not reasonable that God will hold us accountable for the time and the location in which we are living in the history of this world? America's poor. Let's look just briefly, and these are, I think, incontrovertible facts. Let's look at America's poor people from a survey in 2011. The typical poor household, as defined by the government, now this is in the United States, has a car, has air conditioning, two color televisions, cable or satellite TV, a DVD player, and a VCR. If there are children, especially boys, the family has a game system such as an Xbox or a PlayStation, and the children spend a great deal of time with those games. Now, we're talking about the poor in America. In the kitchen, the household has a refrigerator, an oven and a stove, and a microwave. Other household conveniences include a clothes washer, clothes dryer, ceiling fans, a cordless phone, and a coffee maker. The home of the typical poor person in America, now there are exceptions, and I understand that. We're talking in generalities about the typical poor in America. The typical poor in America's home is in good repair and is not overcrowded. In fact, the typical average poor American has more living space in his home than the average non-poor, or we might even say middle-class European has. By its own report from surveys, the typical poor family was not hungry, was able to obtain medical care when needed, true, sometimes in an emergency room, and had sufficient funds during the past year to meet all their essential needs. In many ways, again, we live in the best of times, but who knew? Did you know? In 1800, the average life expectancy at birth was 39 years old. Now, that takes into account a lot of infant mortality. Families sometimes would have 8 and 9 children, and maybe 3 or 4 of them would actually reach adulthood because of childhood diseases, lack of medical care, living way out on the frontier, and so on. The average newborn, well, in 1900, the average life expectancy at birth was 49. By 1950, that had increased to 68 years. Now, this is the average. And in 79 years today for an estimate for the child being born today. The average newborn being born today, these children here, young children, can expect to live an entire generation longer than their great-grandparents could have. In 1900, this is phenomenal. In 1900, 1% of American women giving birth died in labor. Out of every 100 women giving birth, one of them died in labor. Today, the 5-year mortality rate for localized breast cancer is 1.2%. Conclusion is, having a baby 100 years ago was almost as dangerous as having breast cancer today for women. In 1952, and that's in my lifetime, I was a young boy, 38,000 people contracted polio in America alone. Very scary illness. People that got it generally lost the ability to breathe and would be, their remaining of their life would be in a pressurized tank, looking almost like a water tank. In 2012, because of vaccinations, in 2012, there were fewer than 300 reported cases of polio in the entire world. It was almost eradicated. From 1920 to 1949, an average of 433,000 people in that 30-year period died every year from extreme weather events. Now we're talking about hurricanes, tsunamis, typhoons, tornadoes, and so on. That figure has now plunged to 27,500. Now, this is worldwide, still a large number, but in the entire world. According to a study in the International Policy Network, largely thanks to increases in society's collective adaptive capabilities, warnings, satellite warnings of hurricanes, and so on, so that people can take shelter. According to the Census Bureau in 1900, there was one housing unit for every 5 Americans. So you had an average of 5 people living in a home and small homes also. Today, there's 1 for every 3 homes, or every 3 people. In 1910, the average home had 1.13 occupants per room. By 1997, a few years ago, it was down to less than half of an occupant per room. So in essence, virtually everyone living in the home had at least their own room. Just as an aside, I was 16 years old before I got my own room, but not complaining. According to Professor Julian Simon, the average American house or apartment, and I can attest to this, the average American house or apartment is twice as large as the average house or apartment in Japan, and 3 times larger than the average home or apartment in Russia. You have a normal size 1 or 2 bedroom apartment in America compared to your Russian counterpart. You are wealthy. They will deem you as wealthy. According to, we saw that. Why are we not doing here? Okay, there we go. Getting on, and I know this is kind of overwhelming, but I'm trying to build a case. The average American work week has declined from 66 hours in 1850. You work pretty much 6 days a week, from sunup to sundown. And it was 51 hours in 1909. It's about 35 hours today, probably even less with some of the changes. So enjoy your weekend. The average American now is working roughly half of what their forefathers did in 1850. Now this is key here. You need an annual income of $34,000 a year to be in the richest 1% of the world, not of the U.S., but you want to be in the top 1%, Your income is $34,000, puts you in the top 1% of the world. To be in the top half of the globe, you need to earn $1,225 a year, folks. Young people, you can do that babysitting or cutting grass. For the top 20% in the world, it only takes $5,000 a year to be in the top 20% of the world income. To enter the top 10%, you need $12,000 a year. And to be in the top one-tenth of 1% in the world requires an annual income $70,000. America's poorest are some of the world's richest. The legacy of the pandemic. How many of you knew that in 1918 and 1919, there was a worldwide, not just epidemic, pandemic of flu? Millions, and we don't even know how many, but the estimates range between 30 and 50 million worldwide died. An estimated 675,000 Americans were among the dead. Some of your great-grandparents would have experienced this. One doctor in his writing said, the sick, are placed on the cots until every bed is full and yet others crowd in. The faces soon wear a bluish cast. A distressing cough brings up the blood-stained sputum. In the morning, the dead bodies are stacked about the morgue like cordwood. This is in our country and less than 100 years ago. 675,000 deaths from the flu. I'm going to go through some pictures very quickly. They're graphic, but as they say, the picture is worth 1,000 words. Many of us don't know this history of what others have gone through. Poverty in America, the Great Depression, 1929 to 1940. That picture on the screen now is the iconic picture from the Depression of a young mother with their children, lost her home, on the move, and trying to get to California where there was reported work. Here is a shot of men wanting jobs. They'll take anything. They just give me a job, just whatever it is, I want it. And day after day after day, they would go down to the job offices, employment offices, and try to get work. A couple of young boys with their lunch in a pail, almost looks like a paint pail. And you, as you focus on them, notice the despair that is within their faces. Now, is there poverty today? Yes. But this was dire poverty that people went through. Here is a picture of a dust storm, as you can see there, near Beaver, Oklahoma. Because of soil erosion, the soil was plowed year after year after year with no rotation. And the topsoil became loose, and these huge winds came through. And you can see this is hundreds of feet high. That is dust. Children, and particularly elderly people and children, got what was called dust pneumonia from breathing the dust. So that they're when they sneezed or spit up, it was actual black, like dust. And it was pneumonia. It would get into their lungs and shorten their life or kill them very suddenly. Tens of thousands of people in Oklahoma, Kansas, and elsewhere lost their farms and then moved great migrations to California. If you have the time and can get it, The Grapes of Wrath is an excellent old movie shot in the 30s of the migration to California. And it's very much as it was in real time. Young folks, here's a sod house that was just built up out of cutting literally sod out of the ground and building up the walls of the house. Looks like it's maybe, 6 feet high. I'm sure one room. Don't know. Could have been 3, 4, 5, 6 people living in that dust, that sod home there. There's a family with everything they own in the back of an old truck. They've broken down. This is somewhere probably out in Colorado. Imagine picking up everything you got in a truck, trying to go from Oklahoma all the way to California, out through the desert of Nevada and so on. Thousands of them broke down. Thousands of them died trying to get there. Imagine as a young mother and a young father, with your children out there in the blazing sun in an old truck like this that's now broken down. Happened thousands and thousands of times. Here are some young people. You can see they've got a little pair of overalls, all that they've got on a truck, stuck out somewhere in the middle of nowhere and trying to get to California. Here's a woman with a young child. Young mothers, next time your child is sick, now that's a real danger, and that's a real worry, and that's a real concern. But imagine the anguish that this young woman is going through, living in a tent with her young child here. These are Americans. This is not third world. This happened in our own country. There's, again, the iconic photo of the young mother with several children. This is a family, sharecropper family in Alabama. If you look very closely, you can see the sores that are all over them. Rickets, which was a vitamin C deficiency, was common, made the bones of the chest stick out. This was a squatter's house in Arkansas, just going around picking up wood, sticks, whatever they could find, throw together in a little house. This is not for the chickens. This is not for the pigs. This is what people are living in Arkansas. This was a squatter's house in Texas. You can see that there's a bigger house in the background, and some squatters have just found whatever they could do and put it together in a hut. That's what Americans were living in the 30s, some of them. This is a house right here, and it's the closest thing I could get to what my grandparents' house looked like. My grandfather was a sharecropper in Mississippi. And to show you how near this was, as a young child, I remember before they got electricity, no plumbing, they had an outhouse in the back, no refrigeration. They brought literally blocks of ice in an ice box that they would try to keep things cool in. Leaks in the ceiling, tin roof. That's what they grew up in. That's what they lived in as I was growing up. They tried to improve it later on and make it more comfortable. But this is what many thousands of Americans were living in the 30s, 40s, on up into the 1950s, particularly in the South. Destruction in World War II, just a few slides. The British victory in the Battle of Britain in 1940 was achieved at a heavy cost. Now, these are our forefathers and mothers, so to speak, from England. This was from the bombing by the German Air Force. Total British civilian losses from July to December 1940, 23,000 dead, 32,000 wounded. With one of the single largest raids on 19 December of 1940, almost Christmas time, in which almost 3,000 civilians died. Now, we all remember 9/11, horrible event, 3,000 people killed here in one day. This went on for weeks, months, and you know, night after night after night. This is a neighborhood in London that was bombed during the Blitz. Coventry Cathedral in London, also bombed. These are young children that were spending the night in the subway of London because the raids were coming night after night after night. So if you look closely, they've got their little teddy bear, one on the left, got their favorite toy. Mom and Dad would take them down into the subway, and they would, you know, make a pallet, try to get some sleep while the bombs were falling night after night after night. This is Berlin. Now, we also bombed Berlin tremendously. You can see the ruins. This was in the summer of 1945, after the war in Europe, after the Americans and the British and the Russians had taken over in Germany. More bombing of Berlin taken in the summer of 1945. The Battle of Okinawa, and Faye and I have an interest here. We lived in Okinawa for 7 years. There are many of the scars of the Battle of Okinawa. This was the last major island invasion prior to the end of the war in the Pacific. Allied casualties on mostly Americans, over 12,500 dead or missing. This is one battle. 38,000, almost 39,000 wounded. 33,000 non-combat wounded. 79 ships sunk or scrapped, 763 aircraft destroyed. One battle of World War II in the Pacific. 140,000 civilians, mostly Okinawan Japanese, killed in the war. They were caught in the crossfire between the American fire and the Japanese. Went on and on for weeks and weeks. Poverty in the world today. searching in a Manila dump site. This was only in the last year or two. Major typhoon, similar to a hurricane, went through Manila, south of Manila, and for weeks they couldn't get food, water, and supplies in there. And so they went literally, we call it dumpster diving. This was going through a dump site in Manila to try to find some food. Child at home, difficult to see there in Manila. Manila housing area, devastated by the typhoon. Young child there in his home. And here you see the stark contrast between the haves and the have-nots. The skyscrapers, the huge office buildings of Manila, and then the slums that surround it. And Faye and I have been there, been years ago, but we saw that. You go from a five-star hotel into a slum like that. Freedom's in America. Freedom to assemble. We're here today without fear. Pray to God that we can continue that freedom. With freedom of worship, not having to hide, not having to mouth the words of our songs the way they do in China and elsewhere. Still free to speak our mind to a trial by jury. Freedom against unreasonable search. Freedom of privacy and freedom to grow beyond our class of ancestors. Is it not reasonable to believe that God will hold us accountable for being good stewards of all that we have been blessed with as Christians first, but as Americans in the second decade of the 21st century? How do we process this? I think, first of all, we recognize our peculiar blessings, that we are incredibly blessed in all of human history. We acknowledge that God is the source of all good things, and we show gratitude to God, not just over the shoulder, but deeply within our heart for every good thing that comes our way. We have endurance in the face of trials, knowing that many others have faced far worse and are facing far worse than we are today in many cases. We develop, I think, a mental toughness toward minor inconveniences, and this really concerns me. As a parent, as a baby boomer, a parent of two children, I don't think I did a good job getting into their hearts their own responsibility, in essence, to make their own way. I should have given them more jobs, more tasks, more responsibilities. In other words, I think my children had it too easy in many regards. And I am concerned about that today. If I had it to do over, which is a crazy statement, I would make sure that my children are given responsibilities and held accountable for them. Don't give everything to our children on a silver platter, as it were. We've got to have and develop a mental toughness to deal with problems in our life without just, going off the deep end. We have to have a reduced anxiety and subsequent stress from the anxiety in light of God's sure promise that He loves us, cares for us, and that eventually will reward us for faithful service. Good little expression there is, we are too blessed to be stressed. That's something you can put on your refrigerator, as they say, and look at it every day. Yeah, we have stresses in our lives, but we're too blessed to be stressed. Conclusion, God does send His rain on the just and the unjust. It's always been that way, and it always will be. Don't get upset when you see the ungodly prosper. It was that way in Solomon's day. It's that way today. But any fair assessment, misspelled fair there. I'll have to get my typist. Oh, wait a minute. I was the typist. Any fair assessment would conclude that God has blessed Americans in abundance, and we should acknowledge this and show our gratitude every day. God's ultimate gift and blessing was His sacrifice of Jesus, the Christ, for our sins. No question. Through Him, we receive all spiritual blessings. But through God's long suffering in allowing this world to continue, we continue to remain blessed physically as Americans. So how will you and how will I respond in the future to God's generosity and His tremendous outpouring of grace and blessings, physical and otherwise, upon us first as Christians and second as Americans in the second decade of the 21st century. That's the message. We'll go with